at all. There was no connecting on a day that I really wanted to connect with many people. So there's one other member of my family. His name is Lucky Bear, and there is a picture of him somewhere. Lucky Bear is a 90-pound beast, but so sweet. And he, to me, epitomizes FOMO, fear of missing out. When we, in fact, this picture cracks me up because this is in the nursery, and I was just taking one of those, you know, the first year you take monthly pictures to show how your kid is growing, because we all do that. And he just kept pacing in front of me, like, please take my picture. Please look at me. And I finally turned to him, took his picture, and he, like, perfectly posed with this beautiful sign. I love it. Anyway, his behavior constantly is FOMO. Like, if we are packing to go on a trip, he will not relieve himself outside. He's like pacing right next to us or next to the car because he doesn't want to miss his opportunity to jump in and come with us. And inevitably, 15 minutes into the car ride, you'll hear heavy panting in the back because he needs to go. He needs to relieve himself. At home, you need to change your pants. Well, he's going to be right there with you. You need to go to the restroom. He needs to be right there with you. He just is desperate to not miss out on any opportunity. And sadly, I see myself in him sometimes, this kind of almost desperation to connect with people. And I think it's that need to connect that we all have. And really, we really do. Even from as soon as we're born, we need to connect with our moms. It's like the first major need, you know, aside from eating and sleeping, it's to connect and bond with somebody. And that need exists throughout our life. So Megan asked me to talk about FOMO, and I really kind of laughed a little bit, so did my husband, because I'm not beyond this at all. I still struggle with this a lot. But as I was really just thinking about it and praying about it, what I came to realize is that FOMO is just a symptom of a lot of different things. And there's four things I think in particular that it's a symptom of. One, I think truly it's a symptom of an overstimulating addiction to the false connection we find online. It's a lot of words, so I'm going to repeat that. It's a symptom of an overstimulating addiction to a false connection we find online. It's also a symptom of loneliness and a need to belong. I also believe that it's a symptom of shame. So let's break this down. So addicted to false connection online. I can't tell you how many times in the day I'll pull out my phone and I'll just automatically, without thinking about it, pull up my Facebook or Instagram and just see if I have notifications or see what people are doing. And I think that the motivation behind that is I just want to connect with people. I want to see what's going on. And actually, since preparing this, I deleted it from my phone because I'm pretty convinced that it's not helpful. And I have to tell you, I've pulled out my phone several times to try to open it. I'm like, oh yeah, can't do that. It's okay. I'm already connected. We're fine. We are a digitally connected people. Dimitri Martin, he's a comedian, I think is just hilarious. He does a lot of one-liners. He said, the digital camera is a great invention because it allows us to reminisce instantly. And let's be honest, I bet a lot of you have taken a picture of your sweet little kiddo and then immediately leaned over to the person next to you and said, look how cute he is, while he's still there being like, Mom, look at me. How we're just kind of addicted to that phone, that technology. The technology also moves at a really fast pace. You know, you look at people scroll through Instagram and they're just scrolling quickly. And the images are very fast. We're just like inhaling them so quickly. I think there's an addiction to that pace. In addition to this sense of maybe there's some jealousy there, but also this false connection. So there's a video that was made in 2013. It's slightly outdated already, but I think there's some good truths still that are there. And Brenton, if you could play that, we'll just take a look at that.
A simple thought. Monkeys that are known to have a developed social life organize in small groups of several dozen members. The size of each of these groups is limited. In order for them to function, all members of the group need to know each other well. The average size of the group changes from 20 to 50 members. When the number of monkeys in a group passes a certain threshold, the social order crumbles, and the group tends to split into two separate groups. A similar situation can be found amongst humans as well. The invention of language and gossip has helped us shape larger and more stable groups. Sociological research indicates that the maximum natural size of a group of humans is roughly 150 members. Most humans are just incapable of intimately knowing more than 150 people, so even today, the threshold of human organization is around the number of 150 members. Man is a social creature, and the feeling of loneliness can drive him mad. Yet the Western and modern world sanctions individuality. The individual is measured by personal achievements, such as having a career, wealth, a self-image, and consumerism. In this course of action, many people lose their social and familial connections in favor of a self-actualization ideal. As the social fabric in the Western world weakens, it is not surprising that more and more people define themselves as lonely, and thus, loneliness has become the most common ailment of the modern world. One of the possible reasons for this ailment is the online social network. In a world where time is money, in which our surroundings heavily pressure us to achieve more and more, our social life becomes tainted and more demanding than ever before. And then there's technology. Simpler, hopeful, optimistic, ever young. We become addicted to virtual romance, disguised by the social network which supplies an impressive platform that allows us to manage our social life most effectively. However, our fantasies about substitutions are starting to take a toll. We're collecting friends like stamps, not distincting quantity versus quality, and converting the deep meaning and intimacy of friendship with exchanging photos and chat conversations. By doing so, we're sacrificing conversation for mere connection, and so a paradoxical situation is created, in which we claim to have many friends while actually being lonely. So what is the problem in having a conversation? Well, it takes place in real time, and you can't control what you're going to say. And that is the bottom line. Texting, email, posting, all of these things let us present the self as we want it to be. We get to edit, and that means we get to delete. Instead of building true friendships, we're obsessed with endless personal promotion, investing hours on end building our profile, pursuing the optimal order of words in our next message, choosing the pictures in which we look our best, all of which is meant to serve as a desirable image of who we are. We're expecting more from technology and less from each other. The social networks aren't just changing what we're doing, but also who we are. And that's because technology appeals to us most where we are most vulnerable. And we are vulnerable. We are lonely, but we're afraid of intimacy, while the social networks offer us three gratifying fantasies. One, that we can put our attention wherever we want it to be. Two, that we will always be heard. And three, that we will never have to be alone. And that third idea, that we will never have to be alone, is central to changing our psyches. It's shaping a new way of being. The best way to describe it is, I share, therefore, I am. We use technology to define ourselves by sharing our thoughts and feelings, even as we're having them. Furthermore, we're faking experiences so we'll have something to share, so we can feel alive. We slip into thinking that always being connected is going to make us feel less alone, but we are at risk because the opposite is true. If we are not able to be alone, we're only going to know how to be lonely.
Okay, thank you. Have any of you seen that before? No, kind of new. I think there's still some themes or elements from that I find to be really pertinent to us today. The first is we are connected to too many people. It's impossible to foster deep relationships with 500 Facebook friends. And I actually think he gave the number that as humans we can have intimacy with 150 people. That is overwhelming to me. I don't think that is true at all. The other theme here is we spend a lot of time and energy on how we're presented. And I'm not just talking about what your profile picture looks like. I'm talking about how you're presented even in groups. Like, I won't lie, this thought has crossed my mind. I'm going to Lake Oswego today. I can't wear sweats. Okay. Or I don't want them to know that I didn't complete my Bible study. Or I can't let them know that I don't always enjoy my kids' company. or I have to seem competent in my job. I don't know, do you guys relate to that? Is just me? This need to present yourself as something that you believe other people will accept? So I am a pretty social extrovert, and I'm really honestly energized by relationship. I think that's what I do, why I do what I do. I love engaging with people. But I realize, especially in this season of life of raising two little kids and working and being, we're actually part of a church plant, so there's a lot going on there too, that I just don't have the energy to be involved with a ton of people. What I realize now is that a few deep and authentic connections is much more satisfying than the hustle of socializing. So I think connection is key. How do we define that? And I'm wondering if you guys can just take a couple minutes and talk to the person next to you or in little groups and answer this question. What makes you feel most connected to another person? All right, let's come back together. I don't need to talk to you about a connection. You guys do that really easily. So I shared a little bit that I was pretty involved with River West until 2013 when I got married. At that time, it was kind of, I had just started a private practice as well, so really wasn't working much. And I had moved across the city, which felt like moving to a different state, you'd think. The beautiful community I had here, I felt really disconnected from. And I felt really isolated and really lonely and pretty depressed, to be totally honest with you. About 5 minutes after I moved out there, I was invited to join a small group of ladies, and I was like, yes, these are the cool chicks. I'm so honored to be invited, and it was such a great community. We shared our stories. We shared life. We'd go out with each other on birthdays. We'd spend a lot of time celebrating each other and supporting each other. I remember going to events, if someone was speaking or something, we'd all attend, and we just wanted to be there to be the cheerleaders. It felt so amazing. And then life kind of happened again, and community just shifted. We ended up kind of moving out of one church situation and helping to plant another church, and then a lot of people were having babies, and we were just really focused on family. And I had my first baby as well. In fact, we planted a church one Sunday, and 2 weeks later, we had our first kiddo. And I just remember feeling once again that sense of isolation and loneliness after having Micah. I'm home. I'm not as mobile as I used to be. I'm not as free to go out whenever I want to with my friends. I have responsibility. I'm working all day long with this kid, and I'm lonely. We kind of were able to reboot some of that community, and it was different now, but it was still good. And we just kind of gotten this new rhythm of friends with kids, you know, and how to do life together. And then last summer, one of the key members of this group kind of transitioned out. And I just remember feeling surprised by how devastated I was by this, how this person could leave us, or that's how I felt or interpreted what had happened. And I realized that I had this expectation that my community would give me a sense of belonging, acceptance, being wanted. It depended on what community I was part of that allowed me to feel like I was a complete or reasonably cool person, you know? And that was so backwards for so many reasons, but I do think this video had a really good point. At the very end, it said two things. We slip into thinking that always being connected is going to make us feel less alone. That hasn't been my story. I'm still well connected to people, and yet I feel alone sometimes. And then it also says, if we are not able to be alone, we are only going to know how to be lonely. Just kind of a mind trip, I think. But if we are more content in our loneliness and just being who we are and feeling as though we belong, just because we are, just because we are daughters of Christ, quite frankly, then I think we need that community less, and then we're actually able to engage in that community better. Maya Angelou has this quote, and thanks to Brené Brown, I became aware of this quote. It is, "You are only free when you realize you belong no place. You belong every place. No place at all. The price is high. The reward is great." This is, anyone want to take a guess what that means? I'm still trying to figure out all of that means, but what I have realized is that our sense of belonging slash our sense of worthiness is not fulfilled by other people. We belong because God says we do. We have worthiness because God says we do. And if we, the more we are convinced of that, the more we're able to enter community more open to receive and more open to give, because we don't need that community. We can just be fully present there. And I think that's kind of what she's getting at. There isn't a place that gives you belonging. But if you have that sense already, then you can enter a place and feel like you belong there. Does that make sense? So here's another discussion for you guys to turn to the people next to you. Have you ever felt like you don't belong? And what was the scenario? Go for it. Okay, thank you. So Wednesday, I was preparing for this. And really, this kind of became a lot bigger than I expected it to be. So I was at Starbucks nearby, because I, once again, use my mother to watch my kids so I can get some work done. So it's just at the Starbucks off of Meadows. You know, it's at the bottom of that business park. So a lot of the people that frequent that are people who work in those buildings. And so I'm typing away, and in walks in Joel Butkus. Do you guys know who that is? His wife is Kristen, right? That's her. And I'm familiar with him. We used to do worship team together, and, you know, I served with the youth group with his wife. And so kind of familiar, but we don't connect that often. And he looks at me and he says, "Are you still going to River West?" I'm like, 5 years, dude. No. thanks for noticing. And I just kind of joked with him and I said, "No, I don't go there anymore, but I do like to check in every once in a while because I don't want y'all to forget me." Total joke. We laughed. He moved on with the day. Didn't think much of it until that night. It's getting in bed and it just like light bulb moment. I ran to my computer. I'm like, I gotta write this down. And I realized that if you ask me the question, fear of missing out, what exactly are you afraid you'll feel if you were to miss out on something? The answer for me would probably be, I'm afraid I feel forgotten. And that's a big one, forgotten, replaced, overlooked. Yeah, so there's your story. So this is shame, okay? This is shame and it's acting out. Shame, I know this is kind of a hot topic and I hope that you know a lot about it because I think that it's setting a lot of people free to be able to speak and understand what shame is and how it impacts us. But just to give you a quick definition, shame is an identity crisis. It's a little voice inside your head that maybe came from a specific moment or maybe it just kind of built up over time that says you're not valuable, you're not worthy. And it says something specific to you, maybe at distinct moments or just kind of continuously. It's a voice that's really trying to change your identity to something less, something kind of, like I said, unworthy. And the thing about shame is like it's kind of like mold growing in a dark, damp corner. When you shed light on it and dry it out, it goes away. And so the thing you need to do when you recognize shame is to shine light on it, and then you're able to speak truth to it. I'm afraid I might be forgotten, but I'm not forgettable. I'm not. The Lord remembers me. He went after the lamb. He remembers me. That's the truth. I can speak truth to that. And then maybe missing out on something isn't quite as devastating. Shortly after Micah was born, I stopped by a friend's house. She's part of this community. I asked her permission to share this story. And I needed to drop something off, and so I said, can I come by? She goes, sure. Well, I arrived as people were arriving for her daughter's fourth birthday party. And I was seeing, like, these old friends of mine walk into the house and getting ready to have this party. And I immediately felt like, okay, I move across the city, and now you're forgetting about me, and I don't get an invitation to this birthday party for your four-year-old? and I drove away, and I cried because I just felt so forgotten. And honestly, it took me a couple hours to kind of come around to, oh, yeah, everyone who was arriving had a four-year-old because it was her four-year-old's birthday party. The kids received the invitations, not their parents. It was just this moment where I had to recognize what was happening within me before I could speak truth to that. So I think shame, one of the symptoms of shame, might be our fear of missing out as well. Let's just keep going because I'll leave time at the end here. So what do we do with this? You know, one thing is for our addiction to false connections online. I mean, it's pretty basic. Limit your exposure. I'm not really sure what else you can do about that except limiting your exposure. Maybe delete the Facebook app. Or if you're really brave, delete Facebook altogether, your account. I told Jamie the other day, I don't know if I can delete Facebook completely because I'll never find out about events. how would I be invited to parties? FOMO, for sure. As far as this need to belong or this fear of loneliness, it is when we try to attach our sense of belonging to community, you're attaching it to something, to a moving target. It's fluid, it moves, it changes. It's cyclical sometimes, and people come and go, and that doesn't mean we shouldn't be in community at all. Community is so amazing and beautiful, but it does mean that we can't attach our sense of worth or belonging to community. Instead, we attach it to a fixed point, God, Jesus Christ, our identity in him. That's not even ourselves. A lot of, like, Maya Angelou and Brene Brown will say yourself, but it's God. He's the fixed point. He's the one that's unwavering. When you do that, it allows you to enter relationships without demands, without a need to fit in, to be accepted. And then you have this ability to engage more truthfully, like I said, able to receive, able to give. The thought of missing out on something becomes a lesser threat to who you are. I got a quote up here from Brene Brown. Yeah, you got to read her stuff with a grain of salt, but it's so good. She says, true belonging is the spiritual practice of believing in and belonging to yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world and find sacredness in both being part of something and standing alone in the wilderness. True belonging doesn't require you to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are. I think that's what maybe Maya Angelou was saying, and we kind of talked about that before. Be who you are, and you will belong anywhere. I think, actually, Marianne was just sharing that. Like, I don't have a sense of myself when I enter a group. I have a sense of who I'm being with. I just love that. She doesn't need the group to define who she is. And then for shame, like I said, shed light on the lie so you can speak truth to it. So kind of just reflecting on my own process since being a mom, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in this room. My oldest is 2.5. I'm aware of who I'm talking to. And I'm very humbled that I was invited to come talk about this. You guys have figured out a lot. But just some things that I've kind of realized. I found contentedness in missing out sometimes accidentally. I got too busy and I didn't have enough energy to care. But really, as I kind of reflect back to, there's been a lot of inner process and spiritual process through that as well. One, I no, I can't do it all. So what I do, I make it count. I'm going to water the grass on this side of the fence and not be so concerned with the grass on that side. I also have purpose in what I do. Purpose is such an interesting word, but I really believe as though God has given us purpose in every moment. And that doesn't mean I have to be preaching in every moment. Sometimes purpose is I need to rest. And I'm convinced that I need to do that, and God desires me to do that, and there's purpose in that space in your life. Sometimes it's all the hats you wear. In this moment, I'm a mom, and my purpose is to connect with my children or raise them up to be strong people. Maybe it's a bigger mission in life, and I shouldn't say bigger, but different mission in life, where you feel called to a certain message that you need to share with people. For me, I'd love people to know true sexual intimacy. That's one of my like passions. So I feel purposed when I get to do that with couples. What was her name again? Rhonda. Rhonda spoke at the river on Tuesday, and she shared this verse, and it really, just the point that she made with it was so beautiful. It's Romans 8:28. And we know that for those who love God and all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. The connection she made, or at least how I understood it, was that there's purpose even in our pain, even in our messiness. How many of y'all feel like a hot mess sometimes as a mom? In our brokenness. And that purpose is that it allows us to really connect with other people where they are. And that's like a really deep, authentic connection. That's the type of connection we're after. It allows us to bless others, be present, and really make a deeper impact in this world. The lesson I think I've learned is just personal or inner integrity. And what I mean by that is kind of bringing all these pieces together. Okay, I am limited. I cannot do it all. I really want to prioritize what I do because I want to be fully present wherever I am. I know that I have purpose in everything that God is leading me to do. Therefore, if I miss out on something, I don't need to regret it because I know with this internal integrity that I was exactly where I needed to be, even if it was doing dishes, in exactly the moment that it happened. So when I enter a group, and this is kind of the last, I think, lesson that I've learned, is when I enter a group, I simultaneously don't need them in order to fit in or belong, yet I feel as though I do on some level belong there. And if I have a sense of belonging, I don't need to be at everything. I can just enjoy that sense of belonging when it works. So that's, hopefully that's what you're looking for, Megan, when you asked me to share on FOMO. I guess we do have just a little bit of time. Jamie suggested opening this up for Q&A. I don't know if any of you guys have questions, but shoot. Yes.
When you cut back on social media, did you experience any pushback from other people with that? I feel like I have made attempts at different points in my life, and the family that lives out of state, or you know, people that really want to—they like seeing the pictures of your kids that you post or your life, and I feel like I use that as an excuse.
Yes. So to speak personally, I just deleted the app last night, so I don't know yet. But if I were to kind of bring back to what I would hope happens if I got pushed back, is to kind of remind myself, it's that inner integrity. There's a good reason why, if you choose to let go of that, that you're doing that. And no matter what the pushback is, you can be confident in that decision, that it was good for your mind, and it really is. There's a high correlation with social media usage and anxiety. We really can't escape that. That is a true fact. It's good for you. I hear what you're saying as far as, you know, the purpose of social media was to stay kind of in awareness of what's going on, especially with people you don't see much. The only reason I have relationship with some of my cousins is because of Facebook. So it's not all evil. So I understand the pull, that it isn't a black and white decision. Social media is terrible and evil, just unplug. There's some good elements to it. I think that maybe we need to revisit some of the old way that we connected with people, even from a distance. I find Christmas cards are really odd because we always send it to people who's on Facebook. Like, I know, I've seen these pictures. I really like receiving that because it makes me feel connected to you, but it seems unusual. I think it would be more special to receive a letter or pictures like that from someone I don't usually talk to. So I wonder if there's a way in which you can have a conversation with the people who give you grief and say, what are our other solutions? Because I'm convinced that I needed to do this for me and for my family and just contentedness in life.
Email with a few pictures, you know, an assortment of pictures from the month, just kind of like a monthly update, and that would actually be more personal. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be much, but just to know, I'm thinking of you, and just wanted to share the highlights of the month, and, you know, hope you enjoy it. And then you're, like, not going on the social media site, but actually having more of a real authentic,
that's a good idea. There's an app for that? What's it called?
I don't know what it's called, but I have a friend who sends out monthly, and she just puts in a few pictures, and then she puts in an email of, like, five, you know, family members or friends, and you can, like, change it. So you can have, like, your family email, like, group, and send out, like, family stuff, and then you can have a few friends on there, or whoever you want to send it to. I would look into it, research it.
Research the app that allows monthly newsletters. Okay. Okay. There's a lot of wisdom here. Yeah.
So how do you really connect, and how have you found a way to try to implement those times that you feel more fulfilled? Mm-hmm.
I connect with, I love groups, but I can't really get to know people very well in a group setting. And so I think there's this, like, critical limit as far as how many people can be present. So I am part of a small group, and they happen to also be some of my best friends. And we meet every other Thursday night. Tonight, I'll see them tonight. And it's a smaller group of ladies, and we are intentional about going places and using the 2 hours to actually talk about stuff. And that's, if I can squeeze in another play date, or actually play dates are hard too because kids are distracting, but if I can squeeze in maybe like a happy hour at some point between those every other week appointments, I will. But that provides sustenance to me that I don't necessarily need a whole lot more than that. And I'm an extrovert. I feel needy. I feel like I need deep connection, but I don't need it more than every other week, as it turns out. That's what I do. Yeah.
Okay, so all of this, like, my children are not on social media, mm-hmm. but they still get sad when they have to miss out on things. So taking all of what you've told us, mm-hmm. how would you relay that to a child? Your sense of belonging is still that, you know, nobody will forget you if you don't.
love that you asked that question because I heard rumor that it might be asked. So I asked someone. I asked the child's therapist at Living Wholehearted. She had some great responses. And it's basically as simple as first empathize with where they are. I mean, we all want to be heard. We all want our feelings to be valid. And so get down, have a conversation with your kids. Say, what are you afraid you're missing? What are you afraid this means? How are you feeling about this? And just have a conversation about how this event that they're missing is impacting them. That's going to go a long ways. And then also there's this, she suggested, just continually breeding an attitude of gratefulness and gratitude, being grateful for the opportunities that your kids do have, looking forward to the things that they get to do. So it's kind of this combination of, I'm with you, I empathize with how you're feeling and that you're missing out on something. Let's also talk about what we're looking forward to and what all the things that you get to be part of. Does that help? Okay. Yeah, go for it.
But if you're used to finding your belonging in community,
yeah.
And you said that your true belonging is how God is your fixed point, what was your journey in that, or what are some things that you did to make
I was just joking with someone at church about this very thing, how we kind of throw around, like, your identity is in Christ. Bless you. I mean, like, this just this inner language that doesn't always make a lot of sense. I'd say you'll believe the loudest message. And what I believe the loudest message is the one you hear the most. So shame is one that is very quiet but very consistent. It's a message about you don't have much self-worth. And it kind of plays out. So the more you're able to identify that and speak truth to it, fantastic. But there also needs to be a consistent reminder, a consistent discipline of speaking truth into your life. It is a discipline because I don't think that we just naturally say, Lord, I'm your daughter, and I get to be an heir of your kingdom, and you'll never forget me. I'm more important than the sparrows. You know, we just don't automatically go there. You know, the world is telling us otherwise. And so if you have a discipline of consistently reminding you, it might be a study going through a lot of the scripture that talks about your worth in Christ. It might just be reflecting about the overall story of the gospel and what he's done, and then some of the ways he's shown up in your life and the conclusions you can draw about how he feels about you and your true identity. And then make a consistent, make a list of that and consistently go to that, praying and asking the Lord to create more opportunities for you to experience that as well. Because experience, I think, makes knowledge feel like truth. So it's a discipline and a process. Anyway, there we go.
That was a great answer. That's a big question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.